From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, this is Bob Levy, Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors, and today we're going to do something a bit different than what we've done in the past. As many of you know, next year on November 3rd will be Election Day, where we will elect a president. We'll re-elect President Trump or elect a new president at that time. But additionally, we will elect 435 members of Congress. Today, I am here with Randy Brose, who is a co-founder of the Angerholzer Brose Consulting Firm, and they do political event planning, political consulting, and campaign fundraising. One of the personalities of the 1960s that I always quote is former Treasurer of California Jesse Unruh, who used to say that money is the mother's milk of politics, meaning that politics cannot exist without the resources necessary to deliver a political message. So with that introduction, Randy, I'd like to just thank you for joining us. Randy, among his clients are three folks that work closely with the National Association of Postal Supervisors, the Majority Whip, James Clyburn from South Carolina, NAPS member and member of Congress and former supervisor Brenda Lawrence from Michigan, as well as Congressman Jim Cooper of Tennessee. Brenda Lawrence and Congressman Cooper serve on the House Oversight and Reform Committee. So, Randy, welcome to NAPS Chat.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here with you today to talk a little bit about the work we do and how we work together. My firm, we work with over 20 members of Congress. We design and then implement their finance plans. That, to your point, is the mother's milk of politics. It pays for everything. It pays for the funds we raise for these campaigns, including, PAC contributions from you all and others. Pays for everything from their mail to their TV to their digital operations to oftentimes the folks knocking on the doors to all the consultants who help them run their campaigns, their campaign staff. So it all starts with the work we do here, and it's something that I've been doing for literally 20 years. I started doing this work in 1999 by working on a governor's race down in Louisiana for a then sitting member of Congress from New Orleans. And, I've been doing it since then. It's something that is a lot of fun. Every day is different. And you get to work with a lot of great people and great candidates and great elected officials, such as the ones who you just mentioned.
You mentioned New Orleans. Now, you went to Tulane University.
I did, yes.
And what a lot of people do not know, even in Washington, is that you were one of the mascots of Tulane.
That is Gumby. Correct. Yes.
Talk to me about how Gumby prepared you for the role that you currently fill.
Oh, that's a great question. No one has ever asked me that question. I was when I was at Tulane, I was for a time the mascot who was affectionately called Gumby. Tulane is the Green Wave, and so people say, "What is the Green Wave?" And at the time, it was a Gumby looking figure. And now it's a pelican, which is also the state bird of Louisiana, the brown pelican, but and in the university seal of Tulane. But by the time it was Gumby, and so that was a lot of fun. It's very liberating. You can pretty much do whatever you want when you're as a university mascot. We played in the Superdome, which was a lot of fun as well. I don't know how it. You have to maintain a certain level of energy, which perhaps that has prepared me for what I do today.
Was also energy, but also staying behind the scenes. And as a campaign fundraiser and as an event planner, the member of Congress is actually plays the leading role, and you're more of a supporting role.
Absolutely. I have no interest in being out front. That it takes a special type of person to run for office, to hold that office, to have the positions that they have on all the various issues. I very much enjoy the work I do, which is like many political consultants, is behind the scenes.
Now, these days, how much does a congressional campaign actually cost? How do you, you know, what's the budget for a campaign?
That is a great question. It varies so much. You know, when I first started doing this, it was literally in a lot of races, you were talking about $500,000. And the vast majority of that was going right up on TV. The reason it would vary is because in a place like, you know, Oklahoma or Nebraska, your cost of your TV is so much less than it is in a place like New York or Los Angeles or Chicago or other you know, larger metropolitan areas. Mm-hmm. You can't even compare the two. And so over the years, it's just grown to the where you have, you know, average congressional campaigns are a couple million dollars now on average. Now, I'll also add that it is the work we do in fundraising is what dictates the budget. It is, or was that, that's the way it should be. It should not be the other way around. A lot of people will say, oh, our budget is $2 million. And then I will say, what's your finance plan? How do you get there? And they can't get there. And so in essence, their budget isn't $2 million then. And so you have to put together a whole, which is what we do here is what we have, you have to put together a whole finance plan to help you, you know, where that is where your budget is built from.
Now, let me ask you this question. Part of that budget plan is messaging your candidate, how much mm-hmm. it's going to cost. Now, coming from the postal world and postal supervisors, we're very interested in direct mail. How important does direct mail play in a modern political campaign, do you think?
It's important. It's gotten less important over the years. You know, it's as the digital piece has picked up, it has definitely gotten less important. It is still important, especially when you look at who votes. The older people who definitely are getting their mail and going through their mail and looking at their mail, those people vote. And so it is still very relevant. It is still very important. And that is a significant part of a lot of campaigns.
When you look at a budget, let's say for a candidate, let's say from a rural area versus mm-hmm. an urban area, how do you divide up? There's clearly a difference in media, like mm-hmm. television ad, whether or not you go on TV or don't go on TV, use radio, don't use radio, use mail, use digital. How do you make those decisions as to where you're going to invest scarce resources of a campaign?
Well, that's a good question. I think a lot of it does depend if the resources are scarce or not. You know, you do have some campaigns where you're able to meet all your line items. You know, I look at what happened last election cycle for a lot of specifically Democratic campaigns around the country, where you had some campaigns that were literally looking for ways to spend money towards the end because so much was coming in online. I think a lot of that is, you know, there was a, you know, definitely a big push. I would travel the country with House Majority Whip Clyburn. I remember we were in one campaign and they had signed something called a joint fundraising agreement where they literally just signed something and another group was able to raise money and then distribute six figures to all these different campaigns, congressional campaigns for candidates who would agree to join this agreement. They had six figures deposited in their account. And it was like, okay, we're going to put this on. What are we going to do with all this new money? It was a very unique and different election cycle. And I think that's how quickly, especially from the fundraising side, politics is continuing to change.
Now, I know there are a lot of people out there who might be listening in who are not terribly supportive
right.
of campaign, the way campaigns have, the amount it costs to run a campaign, how campaign funds are raised and so forth. But I think it's important to note, and I think that particularly for postal folks interested in the postal world, that there are a lot of folks out there who are sort of dumping millions of dollars, whether it be UPS, FedEx, or so forth, into the campaigns. So to play on the same playing field from a political action, for SPAC, which is a supervised mm-hmm. political action committee, we got to play this game like everyone else does, or we're going to be shut out. And part of what you do is provide opportunities for not only government relations professionals like myself, but actually folks out in the states or in the congressional mm-hmm. districts to participate and to interact with their members of Congress other than through the traditional once a year, twice a year visit fly-ins to Washington.
Absolutely. You know, those are really important events for the members, you know, for folks who are able to come to the events back home. You know, every political action committee, whether it's the post supervisors or whether it's the anesthesiologists or the nurses association or the Teamsters or whomever, every PAC is made up of locals. All the supporters from around the country who pool their resources in a transparent fashion. That's something that's important to say. PACs were created for good government, you know, for a sense of transparency. And so I say that because there's been a lot of really too much, in my opinion, of, you know, negative connotation to political action committees. People kind of lump them in, unfortunately, with super PACs, which is a very different legal entity, just because they share that word PAC. And, you know, PACs are super important and they're super valued, I also want to add, by candidates and members of Congress. You know, because you have super PACs, which are something different, and because you have all these other third parties, the funds that come from PACs directly to congressional committees are more important now than ever before. And it is something that members of Congress, other elected officials, candidates really value because they need that. They need to be able to say, oh, if somebody comes in, some third party, you know, dark money group that we don't even know who is funding comes in to dump $1 million on me the last month of an election, I need to be prepared. And that is what makes what you all do so important.
Can you define just for folks out there what a super PAC is and how it differs from a traditional political action committee?
Sure. So a political action committee is, you know, individuals have pooled their resources. So whether it's postal supervisors or it's executives at UPS or, you know, people that are joining an association like the American Nurses Association, they contribute to a legal entity called a political action committee. All of their contributions are registered in public. All the disbursements from that political action committee to other political entities like a congressional campaign or a Democratic Party or Republican Party committee that's public as well. So it's all very transparent. You know, that in essence is a PAC, and there's limits to that. Someone can only contribute X amount of dollars per calendar year to a PAC, and a PAC can only contribute, you know, a certain amount to a campaign, and it's pretty limited. People don't realize that a married couple can contribute more money than the entire political action committee of Walmart or of any other Fortune 500 company. So PACs are pretty limited in what they can do. You know, a super PAC, or other entities, C4s and things, they have different abilities. They can receive and spend basically unlimited amounts of money. They can receive money from, you know, corporate entities as opposed to an individual. So people think of like, oh, people are getting money from a corporate PAC. There's been a lot of that in the last couple of years. A corporate PAC isn't corporate money. It's an individual writing a check who works for a company. And that is obviously very different from just a company writing $1 million check to somewhere.
Let me ask you this question, pivot a little bit. We've talked a lot about your working with groups like ours, like the Supervisors Political Action Committee and with campaigns. To what extent do you work with individual congressional offices, that is their legislative operations or their district office operations, if at all?
It depends. You know, that varies to some extent. One thing that, you know, people on the campaign side and the people on the congressional side work together on is a schedule. You know, members of Congress have one schedule. You interact with, there's certain rules that are set up, but you do interact with the scheduling operation to ensure that the member of Congress is where they're supposed to be. Also, most offices will have one person who is designated as a political person who on their volunteer time will be interacting with the campaign to various extents. And so you are interacting with that person who's usually a senior staff person to that elected official as well.
Let's talk about one of your clients, just because she's one of our family. That's Brenda Lawrence, former postal supervisor for Michigan. When you sort of talk with her about events, about working with groups, how does her history as a postal supervisor, was also former mayor of Southfield, Michigan, how does that play into your strategy in running a campaign, in financing a campaign, and so forth?
To be honest, it doesn't really you know, that's her personal and professional background, and something that I know is super crucial and important to her, for all kinds of reasons. And, you know, for the work we do, however, it doesn't factor, you know, to be honest, any one specific thing doesn't factor in that much. You know, I'm always obviously going to keep you and the rest of the NAPS team aware of everything she's doing on the political and campaign side. So that is relevant. You know, but outside of that, I mean, that's pretty much the extent of it, as it would be with any, you know, other outside organization, from what we do.
And one of the other groups that you work closely with is the Federal Postal Coalition, for events. And that, for those out there, the Federal Postal Coalition is a group of organizations that represent federal unions, federal management associations, postal unions, postal management associations, as well as retiree or federal retiree organizations. And Randy, in the past, has always worked closely with us to develop programs and strategies to connect us with certain members of Congress who are friendly to the federal postal community. Can you talk a little bit more about working with them and working with us?
Absolutely. That is a great group, and it's one I've had it's just been a true pleasure and to work with over the years, and that's something I'm definitely proud of. And I'll say, just not just connecting with the folks in D.C., but ensuring when members of Congress or other, you know, candidates are doing things back in their respective districts, making sure the D.C. people in D.C. know about that so they can help convey it to the locals back home. Because that's what's the most important thing is those, you know, the relationships in D.C. are important. The relationships back home are more important. Those are critical. Those are voters. Those are the people that are being represented. Those are the people that are, you know, have longstanding relationships and as opposed to in D.C. to some extent, you know, those are, you know, in D.C. oftentimes you'll have a government affairs office that will have a couple people that are supposed to have relationships to various extents with a couple hundred members of Congress. People back home have one member of Congress, and that is an important sacred relationship that we try to, you know, where appropriate and where it makes sense, to help build.
Right, and you notify groups if they're an event, local events,
yes,
back home. So our individual contributors, let's say to SPAC, or activists within the National Association of Postal Supervisors, are able to attend those events and interact with their members of Congress.
Yes, and those are great opportunities for everyone. You know, that I think it's also important for people who contribute to political action committees to have that opportunity, you know. And, you know, if folks want to be able to, you know, on the same, depending on the political action committee and the relationship, if people want to try to have, hey, I want to come to something back home, and my person who represents me in D.C. wants to come to something, a good fundraiser and a good campaign will, you know, work with the political action committee to help make that happen.
Now, one of the data points that we all look at as political junkies is what's called the generic congressional preference. That is, there are polling numbers that constantly come out that sort of test the question, if the election were held today, would you vote for a Republican member of Congress or a Democratic member of Congress? Right now, I think the average of the polls, according to realclearpolitics.com, is around a little over a 6.5% advantage to the Democrats, people voting Democrat rather than Republican in the next election, or if the election were held today. How does that factor into your sort of thinking when you work on a campaign? And how do you think that factors into, say, a person doing Republican fundraising at the same time?
Yeah, well, great question. Now, when I work on, I think it factors more into big picture things here in D.C. than it does as much around the country. You know, when I first moved here to D.C. from Louisiana, it was 20 years ago, and Democrats were in the minority. Then Democrats became in the majority. Then Democrats were in the minority. Now we're the majority again. And these things change. And oftentimes, you know, a plus 6.5 can change in a month to a deficit, right? So things change quickly. At the same time, the way the lines are drawn in the congressional level, it's hard. You know, there's only so many races that are actually races. You know, for a lot of campaigns, their general elections are really their primary elections. And by that, I mean that the lines are drawn so that whoever wins the primary is probably going to win the general, whether they're a Democrat or Republican, because it's an R or a D plus, you know, 10 or double digits. Now, I do think that you, even though things can change quickly, I do think that you would not be seeing nearly as many Republican retirements, especially senior Republican members of Congress, who, if the Republicans took back the House, would even be chairing committees. You've got those people with those profiles who are retiring. And if they were going to, if they felt within the Republican caucus that Republicans were going to take back the House, they probably would not be doing so in the numbers that they are. And these are people that are very experienced, who have been around for a long time. And so I think that does say something.
Now let's talk about Angerholzer Bros Consulting. How many folks work over here in this office?
About 10 people. We do both political fundraising. We do some nonprofit fundraising. We do event planning. We also do compliance. So for a number of both members of Congress, candidates, and some political action committees, we help with their FEC compliance.
Great. Last question, Randy. What is the most interesting political event you've ever sort of had a hand in planning or implementing?
Wow, that's a tough question. You know, I'll go back to saying, you know, and not to be too political and dodge the question, but one of the things I really enjoy about the work we do is every day really is different. So, you know, I've done events with, you know, one of the first campaign I ever worked on, where we got the silver medal. We came in second, which means we lost. It was for governor of Louisiana, and we had a great event at Anne Rice's home, which was a former orphanage for, you know, Anne Rice, who was, had the, done the, all those vampire books that became movies with Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise. President Clinton came, he was president at the time, and that was a, you know, large, fun, very different type of event. You contrast that where you've got, you know, half a dozen people around a table with a member of Congress having a cup of coffee. And the conversation can just be amazing and powerful and profound. And so you've got those two extremes to other events that are just, you know, you may put on that are just fun, whether it's a, you know, Stevie Wonder concert or a sporting event or all kinds of things. We also, I'll also say some of the most meaningful events we do aren't even of strictly of political nature. They're in people's congressional districts back home, where you know oftentimes with families and children and students, and those are just very very powerful, where you're really helping put something together that's impacting lives.
Right. I'm just thinking about that first event that you mentioned, the Anne Rice event. Uh-huh. Over at her home, the author of the Vampire Diaries. Then I think, after all, we all know that politics is a blood sport.
Yes.
In any case, I do want to thank Randy Bros for joining us today. Randy Bros, again, is the co-founder of Angerholzer Bros Consulting Firm, and he's a good friend, longtime ally, and helps elect members who are very supportive of NAPS's legislative agenda. Thank you for joining me today, Randy.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
I'm going to stand right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you. I'm going